Ms. Tricker, good morning to you. And Mr. Walden?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin? Mr. or Ms. Tricker, then you may approach and you may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Jennifer Tricker. I represent the appellant in this action, Ferrandino and Sons. I'm here today because we argue with the district court's ruling granting Patera's motion to stay the arbitration in the district court case. We believe that the judge ruled outside of his authority pursuant to 252603.
Does that sort of implicit in your position is that the Nebraska's UAA applies as opposed to the FAA, to the issues of arbitration that that this case presents? Is that your position?
Well,
are we governed here by the UAA or the FAA? That's my question.
Well, our position is that we're governed by the FAA because the arbitration provision itself falls under the FAA because it is commerce that is found in interstate. It's interstate commerce. Under the Commerce Clause has
how
broad range.
How is this interstate commerce? This is just shoveling the walls, isn't it?
Now, what we have is two contracting parties from different states. So Ferrandino and Sons is New York. Patera is Nebraska. While they have contracted to perform services in the state of Nebraska, interstate commerce is implicated because you have contracting parties from two different states. And both the Supreme Court and the Nebraska Supreme Court have indicated in the past that the Congress's Commerce Clause is very broad. And this court has said in the past that it would be hard to find a situation in which there's a commercial business where interstate commerce is not affected, particularly when you have parties from two different states. So because of that, we believe that the Federal Arbitration Act does apply to the arbitration provision in the applicable agreement.
Thank you.
But like I said, this is two parties from two different states. A lawsuit was filed in the district court whereby someone claimed that they fell and hurt themselves because the snow was not removed properly. Ferrandino and Sons attempted to tender defense and indemnification to Patera. It was denied, and then Ferrandino and Sons filed a demand for arbitration. A motion to stay the arbitration was filed with the district court. The district court heard argument and found that it was premature to compel arbitration or to move this into to allow arbitration, and sort of set it aside. The problem is 252603 is very specific on the authority of the district court and what it is allowed to do when a motion to stay is an arbitration is before it. It is to determine whether or not there is a contract to arbitrate between the two parties, and if there's a bona fide dispute as to whether or not a contract exists, it is to summarily try the issue and determine whether or not one exists. It's very simple in the statute what the court is allowed to do. The court is not allowed to determine whether or not the bona fides exist or whether or not the arbitration itself will be successful to anybody. It is to simply determine whether or not there's a provision to arbitrate, and if there is a valid provision, it is to go to arbitration. That's under both the FAA and the NUAA. It goes to arbitration as long as there's a valid arbitration. So when the court here stated that it was premature because there was nothing to indemnify at this point, that was improper. The court was not allowed to go that far and to determine whether indemnification was available at this time. The court was only to determine whether or not a contract exists. So as such, it puts my client in a position where it has contracted to arbitrate this exact dispute. The court has said it's premature, which, without going into the facts of that, it's not premature. Even if this court were to say that the court had authority to come to that decision, it's not premature because the provision in the underlying contract is one to defend and indemnify. So right now we've had a lawsuit going on for a year where Patera is to defend and indemnify Ferrandino and Sons. Patera has declined to defend Ferrandino and Sons, and Ferrandino and Sons has now had to hire its own counsel to defend it in this lawsuit.
So the slip and fall case just stops until this arbitration is complete?
No, ideally this would have gone straight into arbitration. The underlying case could continue. It shouldn't prejudice that plaintiff. It could have gone on. We'd probably be done with it by now, and we could continue into the lawsuit. You know, we would get to a point in the lawsuit where we maybe would be mediating, trying to settle, even going to trial. But if my client is forced to go to trial right now or mediate, it has a lot of uncertainty with respect to its ability to, you know, whether it's at fault for this, whether it could have any liability for this. It's why it's incredibly important that this, who is responsible for defense and indemnification gets determined early, which is why it's in this contract, so that the parties can go to arbitration immediately, they can determine who is to defend and indemnify, and all the defendants are placed on a footing where they understand what their potential liability is or how they would like to respond to the defense of the lawsuit.
Did the district court make any comment about the defend?
No. In the order, it only discusses that it's premature because there is nothing to indemnify.
What's your position as to, well, I suspect I know the answer, but why do you believe that this is a final appealable order given the language of Section 252603B?
Certainly. So Nebraska Revised Statute 252620 states an appeal may be taken from an order granting an application to stay arbitration made under subsection B of Section 252603. So statutorily, it explicitly tells us that this is a proper appeal to take because the judge...
granting arbitration?
Granting an application to stay the arbitration, which is what occurred here. Okay. We are currently stayed from the arbitration. So it's a statutory authority that allows for this. So in summary, this ability for companies to contract to determine the liability of an issue like this is incredibly important. It's incredibly important for companies to understand where their risk lies and how they should defend and indemnify a suit when put in this situation. So when the court went outside of its authority and determined that it wanted to, you know, it was premature to make this decision, it harmed Ferrandino and Sons. It harmed them because they don't have, they don't know whether they're going to have to defend and indemnify this, although contractually they believe they don't need to. They are having to foot the bill for attorneys up front. And there was some comment by the judge in the order indicating, well, we know that they're expending money on this, but that can sort of be resolved later. Well, when a company has to expend funds on the defense and indemnification of a lawsuit such as this, that could affect their entire business. They're holding funds back. They're paying legal fees. They have uncertainty of everything. And you know, we always all know it's better to pay later. That's what Patera is able to do here now because it's not being required to defend and indemnify as it contracted to.
What impact, if any, does 25-1315 have on our jurisdictional analysis? You've talked about the fact that the underlying case is ongoing. Obviously, the court's order with respect to staying arbitration did not resolve all claims against all parties. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see anything in the record certifying immediate interlocutory appeal under 25-1315.
Absolutely. It is allowed because this is not, it does not relate to the underlying claim. The underlying claim of the tort and the falling on the snow can be determined absent whether or not this case goes to arbitration. Therefore, this was a special proceeding that allows for immediate appealability because it's a substantial right that was done pursuant to a special proceeding which allows Ferrandino to bring this appeal now.
Even if you are correct that this is a special proceeding and a final order under that statute, under 25-1902, haven't we also said that in a case involving multiple parties and multiple claims, an order that resolves fewer than all of them must both satisfy 25-1902 and 25-1315?
Yes, I believe that statute refers to the claims made in the underlying lawsuit. This will not be resolved. Whether or not this goes to arbitration is not part of the underlying claims brought in the lawsuit.
Isn't there a claim for indemnity and contribution?
That is an equitable claim that we do not believe will be determined in the court because it's a matter of contract law, and the equitable claim won't survive because of the breach of contract claim. So with that, unless there's any further questions, I'd like to reserve my remaining 35 seconds or so. But we do ask that the court remand this case so that the district court can take a look at it and follow the parameters of the underlying statute. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Walden, good morning again to you.
Good morning. Of course, I'm representing Patera Landscaping. Who is a cross-claim defendant? There was a cross-claim brought, of course, before the request for arbitration. So one of the various things that was raised in the court below was waiver. By that being an inconsistent act with the right of arbitration that they clearly knew they had, because they wrote, of course, the arbitration clause in the standard contract that they used with the subcontractor. That's something that doesn't matter whether there's whether Nebraska law applies or federal law applies. The waiver standard is basically the same in both. That was presented to the district court. Now, the district court went off on the prematurity basis instead, didn't reach the others, except to note the, you know, they agreed with the point that Nebraska law requires, in a claim arising from a personal injury involving a tort, that's not something that can be in arbitration. So, yeah, that would be one that, you know, would have to require Nebraska law to apply. So with the notice requirement.
So I'm sorry to interrupt, but the trial court didn't make an express determination about whether the FAA or the UAA governed in this
That's
case.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Do we need to make an express determination? Do we need to pick a lane in order to resolve the issues raised on appeal, assuming we have jurisdiction?
Maybe. And I say that because of basically the standard of review or the process of review in this kind of situation. Of course, there's the is it appealable, and I want to skip past that to the rest of it right now. The first consideration is whether the district court erred. That's always your basic.
If we have
question.
To pick a lane, which lane are you advocating that we pick? Do you believe the arbitration issues here are governed by the FAA or the UAA?
I believe it's under the UAA.
Why?
And that's because it was a Nebraska sky drop, Nebraska snow on a Nebraska property, and a Nebraska company was hired to keep it maintained so that people in Nebraska don't slip on the Nebraska ice.
So Ms. Tricker says there are contracts from different states.
And certainly in their briefing, they want to focus on, hey, we've got this contract, we're from out of state, and Walgreens is from out of state, and we're all nice and international or something, and so
that's the
scope they want to be on.
Isn't that the contract in which the arbitration provision appears?
No, it's a subcontract between Ferrandino and the Nebraska Patera Landscaping.
Where's Ferrandino based?
It's based, I believe, in New York.
So we got a subcontract between parties from different states. In which
that's
the
true, but the activity is Nebraska. The program is Nebraska. They hired them to do 3 Walgreens all in Omaha. That's it. There are cases that have to do with somebody coming from out of state to supply a service in Nebraska, which is found to be interstate. But this is somebody from out of state hiring somebody to do things in Nebraska, hiring Nebraskans to do things in Nebraska solely. And I believe that fits like the Garlock sort of scenario where a house being sold in Nebraska was found to be intrastate, not interstate, although there obviously are all kinds of tangential, as the court used that word, tangential details about it that involve interstate. I think that where this contractor for Walgreens, is based is a tangential detail because really the activity has to do with Nebraska solely. So it's not necessary for affirming to, you know, to go off on the Nebraska track, Nebraska law applying, because there are, you know, four things that were presented to the district court. And so if the district court erred in the prematurity decision, well, it still made a decision, it still had a result, and it is a standard, you know, that this court said repeatedly, a proper result will not be reversed merely because it was reached for the wrong reason. That then gets us on to the four other reasons that the court, you know, did not base its decision on. You know, two of them have to do with, you know, the Nebraska law applying. That's the required notice in the statute, and then the personal injury based on tort aspect of it. But there also are, you know, when you go to the actual arbitration agreement, or arbitration request itself, it violates the arbitration agreement. And so that is unenforceable, and that's because it specifically includes Walgreens as somebody that it wants to have the arbitrator decide the rights, you know, for. But the arbitration agreement, you know, says, you know, no arbitration or action under this agreement shall include any claims by any person or entity in privity with or claiming through or on behalf of either you or us. You and us are Ferrandino and Patera only in that subcontract. And neither of you shall, or neither you or we shall arbitrate or litigate as a representative of or on behalf of any other person or entity. Well, they specifically, you know, seek defense and indemnity for itself and customer Walgreens and cost reimbursement related to the underlying case. So that's a ground that would justify affirming the order, not on the necessarily on the prematurity ground, but because it's there and it's established as a matter of law by the documentation. There's no facts that it needs to go back, you know, to find. There's also the, I've already mentioned, the waiver. That's the other ground that can exist, that's true, as a matter of law, from the court record, what they did, they did a cross-claim. Then, a few weeks later, they inconsistently wanted to arbitrate. So, I believe under this court's decisions that have adopted this, the U.S. Supreme Court's view of waiver, prejudice is not part of that anymore. It used to be you struck it out after the U.S. Supreme Court struck out, you know, prejudice from the waiver formula. So I believe that we go, you know, to any of those other four, you know, four bases, if any of them, as a matter of law, supports what the district court did, then the district court reached the right decision and that should be affirmed. If you think that there's any reason that the district court needs to do something else to find facts or evidence or what have you, it's the remedy is not what, you know, they want you to do, is simply to vacate the district court order and then let them go ahead with the arbitration. The remedy would be you know, to remand with directions to address, you know, the valid points or to address whether the other points are valid.
So you've spent a considerable amount of time on the what you're describing as the merits of the ruling, and I want to drag you back to the appealability of the order. I'm not, and you've advocated that this, that the arbitration issues are governed by the UAA rather than the FAA. What under the UAA makes the order immediately appealable? And if we're under the FAA, what is our path toward appealability of that order?
Well,
immediate,
of course,
interlocutory appealability.
Of course, we take the point of view that it's not an appealable order. So everything I said, you know, depends on you finding that, you know, you're reaching, you know, that there is an appeal here. Otherwise, it just goes back, you know, no appeal, and the order of the district court stands. I believe it's not appealable because it's not, I covered this in the brief, but under the statutes, it's not these.
Which statutes?
20, let's see, it's a combination of 25, 26, 20, which refers over to 25, 26, 03. And so it's, let's see, yeah, the reference is in 2620A1, an order denying an application to compel arbitration. Of course, this was the opposite, made under 25-2603. They did not compel. He went the opposite direction. And then 03B, on application, the court may stay an arbitration proceeding commenced or threatened on a showing that there was no agreement to arbitrate. Well, that's one of, you know, our grounds include that there's no agreement, no enforceable agreement to arbitrate. But that's not what the district court did. It said it was premature. So that doesn't fit any of this. So you have to go to 1925-1902, the special proceeding aspect. But that's not just that it's a special proceeding, but also that the substantial right is affected. And that's where the district court comes in with saying, you know, well, at the end of this whole thing, basically, if arbitration is allowed then, after considering these other grounds, then the arbitrator can, and it's allowed, then the arbitrator can kind of settle up accounts, because now they'll know what the number is from, you know, the lawsuit, and there'll be a defense cost, and that could be, they may be attributable to somebody else. So you did address the defense aspect of it by saying, you know, settle up at the end, and the arbitrator can handle that if there's any arbitration that's allowed at that point. So that's our position. No appeal, but we would, if you do, then affirm the district court on either the ground that it had or any of these other four grounds that we cited. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And do we have time for rebuttal?
28 seconds, Your Honor.
28 seconds.
We will stand on oral argument.
Thank you very much, counsel. That concludes arguments then in McPherson versus Walgreens Boot Alliance, Inc. You are excused, and the court is adjourned.
Thank you.